Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
You're listening to the Celtic Soul podcast with me, Andrew Millen, and you're all very welcome to episode 17. My guest on the show will be Irish actor Aaron McCusker of Shameless fame. This episode has been sponsored by McKeever's Bar, Portadown. Thanks to the McKeever family for their continued support. The team are back from France, and so are the lucky fans who made the journey. Although from talking to away days regulars Hinesy and Dixie, their pockets are a lot lighter. Paris takes no prisoners when it comes to a few beers, a coffee or a bite to eat. Or in Dixie's case, a shave. €90, they saw you coming. Good to see the boys flying the Ultras flag for us inside the stadium, alongside the PSG Ultras. The PSG fans were among the Celtic fans in the Cartio when we played Rennes away last season. Sunshine, beer and football, sounds like the perfect day. I'll be honest, boys and girls, I was very jealous. Nothing we can do though, as the Irish government have only given us the green light for a handful of countries to visit. And then in the same breath, they've asked us not to travel to them. Confused? Yeah, a little bit. After a tough lesson from the billionaires in Paris, the team returned after a 4-0 defeat. And they will be happy that Hamilton won't have so much talent at their disposal when the season kicks off. As we record this little piece for the podcast, no opponent has been named for the weekend's friendly at Celtic Park, which gives us a chance to use our virtual season book. Dundalk were mentioned as a possible opponent, but they will need to get the green light from the Irish government to play the match. I spoke to John Hartson earlier, and he will be covering the game with Darren O'Dea on the new platform. Two good Celtic boys. We still wait and hope for a new goalkeeper and a few defenders to bolster the squad ahead of next week's competitive kickoff. Aaron McCusker is a native of Armagh who shot to fame in the TV series Shameless and recently played Jim Hunton, the lover of Freddie Mercury, in the blockbuster Bohemian Rhapsody. We always have a wee laugh because we always say, and here's how we get on earlier on when we chat. So here's how we get on earlier on when I chat to Aaron. Hi Aaron, you're very welcome to the Celtic Soul podcast. We started the podcast in lockdown, and in these uncertain times with COVID-19, we've been asking all our guests, how has life been in lockdown?
It's not been too bad. So it hasn't, Andrew. I've got three children, so I've managed to keep myself busy. The wife is also works in the theatre, and she's been working from home. And when she says she's working from home, she does work from home. So she locks herself in a room at 9 o'clock in the morning, and it's up to me then to look after three children, a 10-year-old, a 7-year-old, and a 1-year-old. And I say I look after them. She sets up the homeschooling the night before, and they go in and sit in the room with her and do all that. So I just have my little daughter, Rosie, who's one, all day. And it's good fun, mate, because I'm just getting to bond with her. And, you know, the weather's been good, so we're out the backyard and having a bit of crack. And, yeah, it's not as bad as I thought it was going to be when it all started. I thought, Jesus, 13, 14, 15 weeks of this will send me potty. But you know what? We're coming out the other end not too bad. And the kids are coping quite well. And my oldest one got to go back to school for the last few weeks there. So could be worse. A lot of people are worse off than myself.
So you're returning to some kind of normality. Normally, would you be away from home a lot, Philemon? And is this a bonus to spend so much time with the kids? Are you seeing the positives?
Absolutely, mate. Absolutely. I'm away from home a lot. Most of the stuff I film does end up being away from home. But when I say away from home, it's not always like abroad. I live in Manchester, so a lot of stuff gets filmed in London, things like that. All my auditions would be in London. So, I very rarely get up in the morning and go into Manchester City Centre for an audition. I'm always jumping on the train to London a lot of the times, you know, you'll be in London and your agent will phone you and say, oh, I've got another meeting for you tomorrow. So rather than come back to Manchester and go back the next day, I would sort of stay with my brother or my sister-in-law. So I can end up going to London on a Monday, expecting just to be back on the Monday evening and maybe not back until Tuesday or Wednesday. A lot of the stuff I do does get filmed abroad. I've been filming in Belgrade, and I've been filming in the US, and I've been filming in Iceland, I've been filming in Spain. So it is difficult, it really is, but we've got a really good family around us. My wife's family are from, my wife's from Teesside, so it's only 2 hours away. So if, you know, if something comes up or maybe my missus is working and I've got to be away, it's very, very, very easy to make a phone call and have Jenny's mum come over and watch the kids. And they never, ever let us down. So although it's difficult, we do cope. We do cope. But yeah, it is really difficult being away from the kids a lot. So back to your original question, yes, this whole lockdown thing is actually good, because I have got to spend so much time with my children. And I'm a little 10-year-old. He picked up a guitar for the first time at the start of lockdown, and he's an absolute natural. So I've been witnessing him, you know, slowly becoming of a rock star. So yeah, it's all good.
Oh, there's plenty of talent in that family. I remember you telling me before that you would go, I think it was February, to, is it Los Angeles, for all the American Pilot series?
Yeah.
Was that knocked on the head this year, or did you get to go?
No, it was knocked on the head this year, but it was knocked on the head just simply because I had a job planned. I was supposed to go to New York and do a play. I did a show in Belfast last year called Good Vibrations, which I don't know if you've seen the film Good Vibrations. It's
about, oh, I did. I loved it.
Yeah, well, we did the play of that, and I played Terry Hooley, and it did really, really well. It was really successful. I mean, it was sold out every night. They had to put it on for an extra week. So they decided that they were going to do a tour. We were coming to Dublin, we were going to Donegal, and we were going to New York. So with that in the pipeline, obviously I didn't make any plans to go to Los Angeles, but then it was cancelled with COVID. So yeah, a bit down in the dumps about that, but it still might come back. A lot of the stuff that's being cancelled, they're saying that, you know, give it time once all this passes, whenever it is that a lot of this stuff might happen again. More TV and film. I think the theatre could be, you know, it's going to be a lot more difficult for the theatre to recover from this. So chances of maybe getting to do Good Vibrations are looking more slim, but hopefully the TV and the film production will pick up. But yeah, I missed LA this year, because I do go, as you say, every year, and I've got friends over there who I see every year and I stay with. But hopefully I'll get back soon enough.
Yeah, I hope you get that play back, because I'm a big fan of Terry and the Undertones and the punk scene in Belfast. So I'm disappointed that I didn't get an invite.
Sorry, mate. You know what? If I had known you were a Terry, because you know the thing is, I don't want to say too much, Terry's like Marmite. You either love him or hate him. Have you ever met him, Andrew?
I've just heard him DJ, but the story of the record label, that's just a brilliant story, you know, and it's great. Like, the Outcasts and the Undertones are still going after all these years. So
they were a big part of the rehearsals. Like, they would come in. They would come, well, the Outcasts and Rudy, they would come in and sit and watch us rehearse. And you know, the musicians would be up playing their songs. And, you know, they'd be coming around telling them, oh, do it this way, do it that way. And they came to the opening night and stuff. So it was a really, really good time, a great experience as well, and kind of turned me into a bit of a punk. Rudy and the Outcasts are had some great songs, man.
Brilliant. I was lucky enough to go to, you know, so many punk gigs over the years, and that's why my knees and my back are too good these days, because of all the pogoing and skanking around. But as I said, make sure if that comes back, you let me know. I'd love to go and see that. That would be absolutely brilliant.
Absolutely, mate. You're top on my list for an invite this time.
Anyway, we'll stay up north for now. You grew up in Portadown with the backdrop of the Troubles and later on the peace process. What was life like growing up back then? Because, you know, you're so close to Drumcree and the Gavatty Road.
Do you know, Portadown, love it or hate it, Portadown is my home and I love it. I had a great childhood, mate. I grew up right beside the Gavatty Road in a wee estate called Ballyoran, where my mum was from. And then we ended up living there ourselves. I've only really got good memories about that time of my life. Yes, we were aware of stuff that was going on and things that happened, but it never ever came to our doorstep. I actually remember, I don't know, I think I might have told you this before, actually, when we were doing one of the Celtic AM things, that I remember watching marches go down the Gavatty Road. I remember people standing on the side of the road watching it, and no no animosity, no fighting whatsoever. And again, at that age, I didn't understand the politics of it. You know, I'm talking about when I was maybe, you know, 5 or 6. And then all of a sudden, I just remember this change in around 1992, 93, maybe even a bit later, where, again, for reasons I didn't know, because I didn't, you know, I wasn't privy to it all, and my mum and dad weren't like that. It just stopped. There was no standing on the side of it. It was sitting on the road. It was on your doorstep. There was fighting. There was Land Rovers everywhere. There was blockades at the bottom of the Gibbahi Road where you were. It was kind of like lockdown at the minute. You know, you only let out to do your shopping and put it down and come back. And at that time, it was getting really bad. I mean, it was. You couldn't really go out your door. And my mum and dad decided to move us out of Portadown. So we moved only about 3 miles out the road to the country, to between Tandragee and Portadown. And it was a mixed area. And although I missed Portadown, it was still a nice place to grow up. I still spent a lot of time in Portadown because I went to Drumcree High School there, you know. It was a funny old time. But a lot of people, as I say, were worse off than me. I mean, you know, a lot of people, you know, have been affected by the troubles, especially in Portadown. But I wasn't. I was lucky. And I think that's down to my parents, mate. They're good people and they never, ever brought me up in any sort of sectarian way. They let me make my own decisions and things like that. And I think it's done me good. But, you know, I'd never, ever envisaged staying in Portadown. I like, you know, when I left and went to drama school and stuff, I always remember thinking, you know, not because I didn't like the place, because I've said to you earlier, it was home and I loved it, but it wasn't for me. And especially for what I wanted to do with my life and my career, there was just nothing for me in the north of Ireland. So when I left, when I was 19, that was the last time I lived there. And I'm now 41, mate. So I've been out of there longer than I lived there now.
Yeah, it's funny. I listened to a Stephen Ray interview a couple of weeks ago with Eamon Dunphy, and he was saying, yeah, he moved from the north to Dublin and then from Dublin on to London because kind of the same thing. There was nothing really for him from an acting point of view. You mentioned high school there, or as we call it, secondary school. I know you went to school with a few Celtic boys that I know. Maybe they were ahead of you, a bit older, or maybe a bit younger, whatever. I'll name drop here a few people. Tip McCann, Brock McVeigh, and Gary Kelly.
Do you know Brock?
Oh, yeah. So the rumour is that it was Tip that pushed you over the edge to emigrate. You went to Glasgow and then on to England. Gary went to Liverpool, where he became friends with Peter Hooton of the Farm fame. And now he's just opened up a bar in Spain. And then there's Brock McVeigh, who went to Forest. Tip pushed him the whole way to the Bronx in New York. Can you quash these rumours for me?
Listen, Tip McCann, as you know, is a very good friend of mine. No, it was Tip and me weren't the same class. He was above me. Brock McVeigh, I know Brock through my brother. My brother Rory is really good friends with Brock and really good friends with Gary. He knows Gary really, really well. And to be totally honest, I didn't know Gary was away and had opened the bar and stuff.
I think he mixed with all the rock and rollers in Liverpool and that. I think he's well known. He must have had a bar where all the bands went into, because he seems well in with a lot of the bands, because when a gig is sold out, you know, I'm on to Gary. Get me on the guest list for that one.
Yeah, listen, Tip McCann is still a very good friend of mine, but I will quash those rumours. He was nothing to do with me leaving, so don't worry. And he's always kept, it's like, my mate's back in Portadown, mate. That's one thing I tell you about coming from there. I know a lot of people, I know a lot of actors who come from places like this, and then they get a career, they make it, and they kind of forget about, you know, where they came from. And one thing I'll say about people from Portadown, they will not let you forget where you came from, and they will keep your feet on the ground. And I've got a few mates, Barry O'Neill, Mark Judge, Mickey O'Neill, and Kieran McCann, who are definitely four good friends who keep my feet on the ground. And I love getting back home to see. And to be totally honest, when I do go back to Portadown, obviously to see my folks, they're probably the only four people I will nip out and have a pint with. So,
A couple of points again, it's down in McKeever's.
Yes, absolutely, mate. Absolutely. A couple of pints of McKeever's. Yes, and you know what the thing is, it's hilarious. Because there's a lounge and a bar in McKeever's, right? We all drink in the lounge, but Kieran McCann is the only one I know who drinks in the bar. He won't come through to the lounge. So I'll have to sit and have a couple of Guinness with Mickey and with Barry and with Mark. And then when I want to have a drink with Tip, I've got to walk through. He won't come into the lounge. I don't know why. I've never asked him that, but he likes the bar.
Well, Tip, when you listen to the podcast, you can comment on this. I'll give you a good one about Brock. earlier in the year, I messed up. I got a new passport and I never changed my ESTA. So I'm in the airport, start of February, end of January, start of February. I'm in the airport, Dublin airport, en route to Philadelphia with a couple of mates, the Bull, Dave Matches, my nephew, Robbie, and former Celtic player, Paul Bone. We're all excited, having a beer, and we go to check in, and of course, my ESTA's out of date. So I wouldn't say the boys were gutted, but they weren't long leaving me now. They headed off and were sending me pictures from the business lounge, but they were enjoying smoked salmon and pints. But anyway, I applied for an ESTA, and it took about 3 hours to come true. So I dashed down to the Aer Lingus desk, standby, and there's a flight going to New York or there's a flight going to Miami, and the girl agrees to put me on either flight free. Now, although I was tempted to go to Miami because it was a Super Bowl weekend, I had to go to New York because it was the nearest to Philadelphia because we were doing the Celtic AM show the following day in Philadelphia. So I said, right, what am I going to do now? So I got two customs, cleared customs in Dublin Airport. As you know, you go underneath the airport and you're on American soil. So I'm happy. I'm on the flight and I'm enjoying a few drinks. Just before the plane takes off, put a message out on social media. I'm flying to New York. Can anybody give us a lift to Philadelphia? You know, any Celtic fan that's going to the failure. And I switch my phone off, think nothing else about it. And then I have a good few drinks now. As you know, Aaron, I like a few drinks. So I have a good few drinks. I'm sitting on my toilet on the plane. So I have a good few drinks, bit of banter with the girls from Aer Lingus. Land anyway, forget to switch my phone back on. Sitting in the baggage hall in JFK, I get a tip on the shoulder. I turn around. I brack my face standing there, head to toe in cement or whatever he was walking at that day. The words he greeted me with were, "Would you switch your fucking phone on?" And in fairness to him, he took me to his house. He took me out that night, showed me the Bronx, all the Irish bars. And then the next morning, his pal came along and picked us all up and brought us to Philadelphia. And that is, you know, that is typical of a good Porter Down man.
Absolutely. Do you know what? Finally, someone who says something good about a Porter Down man. I get a lot of stick off people for being for Porter Down. So thank you for that, Andrew. It's good to hear someone giving my little town a bit of, you know, a bit of good airtime.
And if Brock is listening, I'd like to thank him for the immersive hangover I had the next day. Anyway, we're on the Celtic Soul podcast, so it's time to talk a little bit Celtic. And let's go on to another RMR man, a fellow county man of yours, Neil Lennon. He's doing a half-decent job in the second stint. How impressed have you been with him and the team during the last season or so?
I've been really impressed, mate. Do you know, because I thought it was going to be really, even though Neil had been there before and had done a great job, I think following Brenton, after what Brenton had done and the way Brenton left the club, but Jesus, they were playing so well. I thought any manager that was going to come in there was going to have a hard time. I suppose not emulating it because you want to do your own thing, but, you know, sort of keeping the fans happy. And I think he's done all right. I'm totally honest with you. I know he's a man from Portadown. He's a man from Lurgan. I've met him a couple of times when I was in Glasgow way back then. I didn't think that the second time he would do as well. I thought he would find it a bit tougher this time. And I'm not going to lie, mate. I hope I don't get in trouble for this. But I was a wee bit disappointed when he got the job because I just thought that after Brenton and with some of the... I know you can't believe everything you hear in the media, but some of the names that were being touted for Celtic after Brenton left was getting me really excited. Now, I know there were some stupid names that were never going to happen. And to be totally honest, you wouldn't even want there. I mean, Jesus, they were talking about Jose Mourinho at one point. I wouldn't have him near the club. But there was people like Rafa Benitez mentioned. And I remember thinking, Jesus, there would be a good move for Celtic, especially after Brenton. And then I heard that it was going back, that Neil was getting it back, and I thought I was a bit underwhelmed. But you know what, fair play to him, he's come back and he's picked up basically where he left off, and he's done a great job. And at the end of the day, this, you know, he's going to be the man that's at the helm when Celtic hopefully do 10 in a row.
You're like a lot of people, there was a lot of disappointment that day coming out of Hampden when it was announced. I'd spoke to Neil's agent previous to him getting the job, and at that stage he didn't have it. And I know Alan Thompson spoke to him the night before the cup final, because Alan was picking tickets up off him. They'd kissed and made up. Tomo went down to pick up tickets, and when Tomo came back to the hotel that night, he says he had no idea he was getting the job. So I truly believe that he didn't know from speaking to people around him. But you know what? He could have walked away and said, right, I've done my bit, I've come in, I've helped the club, I've put the hoops back on and I've helped the club. You know, we've done another treble. I've played my part. And now I move on and, you know, he becomes an iconic figure. But he didn't. He grabbed that chance with two hands. And there was a lot of pressure on him last season. And he delivered. And especially after, like, going away to Dubai was serious pressure on him because The press had Rangers winning the league. Thankfully, Neil didn't. Celtic came back and they just went on a run where everything was positive. The football was positive and the results were positive. And then, with the exception of the disappointment of going out to Copenhagen, it was faultless. You know, we'd done everything we had to do. Whereas Stephen Gerrard's Rangers came back and they just couldn't string two results together. You know, I don't know what happened in Dubai, but the water was different in our hotel than their hotel. But, you know, you have to take your hats off to them, you know. And I know a lot of people, you know, you can't mention Brendan Rodgers in a lot of Celtic fans' name. But when Neil Lennon did come back, he was speaking to Willie McStay, and I interviewed Willie for Celtic AM, and Willie said that when Neil came back, he couldn't believe the changes that Brendan Rodgers had made in the club and how much more professionally everything was. So we do owe Brendan a few things, you know. So another Irish man. But Brendan, you broke me hard. You went off and had an affair with someone else, you know.
Yeah.
I'll leave it at that. Now, obviously, the last time we chatted was in Celtic AM in Malone's. You were enjoying a couple of pints of Guinness. I was driving, so I was on the coffee.
Yes, you were.
And if memory serves me right, you were your brother and his wee boy. But you went up to Celtic Park and you joined the Kano Kids group behind the goals of Celtic Park. Now, I've had the pleasure of being in their company as well. And what a great charity it is. And one that all the Celtic fans can be proud of. How did you get on that day? Was it an enjoyable experience?
First and foremost, let me reiterate what you said, mate. That Kano Foundation, mate, what those people do is just, mate, second to none. They were brilliant. We had such a great time. I've done it a couple of times for you, and I was really looking forward to this one because, as you know, my brother is a huge Celtic fan. He lives in London. He lives in Croydon. He's got a son called Keelan. And by rights, Keelan should be supporting. I mean, Keelan, they live a stone's throw from Crystal Palace, you know? And you know yourself, you go to school and you end up supporting the teams that your schoolmates support. But not Keelan. Oh, no, Keelan is a prop. Keelan's seven now. Oh, mate, he's a proper tech. He is. His room is just covered, absolutely covered from head to toe. The only thing he didn't have was a Celtic mat. And I got him one on the Emperor's birthday. They're just passed. So it was a special weekend because he was coming to his first Celtic match. And I don't get to see my brother that often. So they arrived when I was I was doing my interview with you. And I blessed a wee Keelan wanted to run up and hug me, but he had to keep quiet. So yes, mate, that was a great, great, great experience to be there with your nephew for his first Celtic game and to be shown such hospitality by those guys, mate. We walked in, you walked us down, we went down to the ground with you. You remember, you introduced us to the guys. I went to give them money for the tickets. They were like, no, don't you dare give us money for the tickets, you know, just make a wee donation, just things like that, you know. They had a little gift pack for Keelan. He had a hat that he still wears, you know, he had a scarf. And mate, the seats. I got to tell you, I've been to Celtic Park a few times in my life. I've never had that. That was the best seats I ever had that day. And just seeing the looks on people's faces that were sitting behind that goal watching that match and the work that goes into that charity, mate, it's hats, definitely, mate. Fucking hats off to them, mate. Really and truly hats off to them. Bunch of wonderful people.
Yeah, it's funny. I was speaking to one of them after and they were saying, oh, how did Aaron get on? I think they were all surprised because you're an actor on TV and you're a man of many accents. I think everyone expects you to have an English accent.
No chance.
Aaron, while we're on the subject of Glasgow, you went there to study drama. You must have had a ball. What a city to go to college and student night outs, you know, Celtic on your doorstep, all the pubs.
Oh, mate, and you're talking to a guy who'd never set foot in Glasgow in his life, you know. It was funny because I auditioned for two drama schools. I auditioned for Lambda, which was in London, and I auditioned for the RSMD in Glasgow. And I got into Lambda. And Lambda at the time was like, oh, everyone was like, oh, you get into Lambda, you've got to go to Lambda. And I would have went to Lambda, but to be totally honest, Andrew, I couldn't afford it. I couldn't afford to live in London. So I ended up going to the Royal Scottish Academy. And I tell you what, mate, I was never, ever as glad in my life that I couldn't afford London because the fact that, mate, it's Glasgow is one of the best cities. I've told you before, it's one of my favourite cities in the world, not just in Europe, but in the world. I had a stag weekend in Glasgow and everything, you know. I go back as often as I can. I've got one of my best mate, Declan, lives there. My brother-in-law lives there. And as you know, I ended up being a student there during the old, a certain Martin O'Neill era. And I tell you what, mate, to be a Celtic fan in Glasgow around that time, I mean, when you had that squad, mate, those players, the Bobby Pettis and the Johan Mjelbys and the Lubo Maraciks and the, you know, the king himself. It's just, mate, it was a great, great time in my life. And yes, plenty of places to go out, plenty of pubs to go and enjoy a good pint and watch the tick. And I've just nothing but fond memories about that time of my life.
Yeah, the Martin O'Neill era was certainly one that sticks out on everybody, you know. And you keep naming fellow Irishmen from up north, you know.
I know, it's just coincidence, isn't it? Yeah, it's Al Martin, boy.
Yeah, it was brilliant. When you mentioned the players there, you know, I think we do forget that full season when Martin was there, how good Bobby Petter was.
Oh, mate, absolutely. Mate, do you know what? And the thing is, I'll get off this podcast, I'll be like, oh, God, I forgot to mention this player, I forgot to mention that player, you know, as if you wouldn't know. Like, but I mean, like Stillian, mate, like Stan Patroff, mate, you know, it's like, you know, and then you had, you know, you had Johnny Hearts and you had Chris Sutton. It's just, do you know what? I actually can't remember who was the keeper back then, but who was it? It wasn't Rob Douglas, was it?
It was Johnny Gould forced, and then he was replaced by Big Rob, yeah? And David Marshall was there as well as a kid.
You look back and you go, my God. It's funny, man, because do you know what? I can't remember. My memories of it, I don't know if it was just before Martin took over, but it's like you talk about going from one edge of the sword to the other. I went to my first Old Firm when I went to drama school in Glasgow, and I'll tell you this, mate. I went on a Wednesday night. It was obviously I was like, Jesus, I'm about to go down Old Firm. It's my first time. Celtic lost it 1-0. Viduka had a goal disallowed for offside, which wasn't offside. I think Celtic missed a penalty, and then I think it was Mark Walters scored in the last 5 minutes, mate, and I seen grown men cry that day. It was horrible. And I, for some reason, I don't remember that it was Martin O'Neill who was managing them. It might have been then after that. So I was there watching this and going, oh my God, this is horrific. And then not knowing that my next 4 or 5 years in Glasgow after that, I was going to see one of the greatest Celtic teams ever, like a team that went to the UEFA Cup final. And, you know, so it's just mad how, you know, the start of my time in Glasgow, that's what happened. And then by the time I left, you know, the change was just, Jesus, sensational, mate.
Yeah, that, I don't think it was Martin. I think I remember, was it pissing rain that night?
Yes, it was.
I remember it well. And I think Alan Stubbs slipped, and he was after having a really good game, and he slipped to let Walters in. If memory serves me right, someone may comment, but I just remember the being soaked on the way to South Park.
Yeah. Man, imagine that being your first Old Firm, mate.
Well, I tell you one thing, I've been at a lot worse. But thankfully, as you say, Martin came in, and, you know, like, you look at the likes of Bobby Petter, Stillian Petrov, you know, these players were reborn. They were reborn after the disaster of John Barnes. Oh, John, he's a great man for trying to rewrite history as well. I'll leave it there, right?
Okay.
Now, acting.
Yes.
Can be a tough gig. It sounds glamorous, but it can be tough to get the gigs. I've spoke to other actors, and they haven't had, we'll say, the high-profile jobs that you maybe had. And, you know, they have to take second jobs, and they're waiting for a part to come in, or they're waiting for a bit of a break. Obviously, you're in the class in university with a lot of actors. You know, does anyone else stick out that made it from the uni when you were there in Glasgow that we would know?
I was the only one that would stick out. James McAvoy, who, as another humongous Celtic fan, James McAvoy was at drama school with me. He wasn't in my class. He was a year above me. So, yeah, he's the one that sticks out that, I mean, as you know, self, he's like, he's a Hollywood star now. But it's just such a coincidence that he's a big Celtic fan. He's a big Celtic fan as well. I don't know James that well anymore. He spends most of his time, I think, in Hollywood. But, yeah, he would be the one that sticks out.
Hollywood County Down.
Hollywood County Down, yeah. Hollywood County Down is where I land up. But no, and then, I mean, there was people, obviously, that went before me. You know, the guy who played Doctor Who, what's his name? I can't remember his name now. But no, but James is the one. James sticks out. And there's a guy called Tom Ellis who went with me to drama school. He's very well known for playing the lead character in a show called Lucifer, which is on Netflix, where he plays the devil. He's not as well known as James, but there's a few people that were there with me that did well.
So it just goes to show that, you know, for the amount of people that go through drama college, very few progress to, you know, the level that you did.
Yeah, well, mate, you know what the thing is? They give you this stats when you're at drama school. It's one of these stats that's thrown around, and it's like that only 3% of actors are ever working at one time. So you go to drama school and you think, oh, it's going to be this, it's going to be that. And they sit you down and they go, right, basically, listen, about most of you will probably leave this college and go and work in bars and change careers because 3% of actors only ever work at one time. And, you know, what are you going to do that makes them hire you? But it's, you know, it's kind of, it kind of gives you that kick up the ass you need, you know. Because to be totally honest, mate, I didn't really learn that much from drama school itself. I loved my time there. I loved doing the acting classes, but there was a lot of stuff that went with it that just wasn't for me, like movement, dance, and poetry. And, you know, I mean, I don't mind listening to poetry and stuff like that, but see, like, you know, I wouldn't be sitting down and reading it and trying to write it. So a lot of the time was spent sitting going, oh, Christ, I've got this class and I've got that class, and, you know, how can I get out of it? So when I did leave, I basically just took what I could from it. And to be totally honest, I would say that I learned more about the industry and about how to make it in the industry from my time on Shameless than really at drama school, because it's like any sort of job, you know, you can tell you all about it, but until you're in that job, that's when you learn, and that's when you sort of, what did they say, sort of mold your craft and things like that. So although I loved my time at drama school, I certainly wouldn't say that it was my time at drama school that made me have the career that I have.
Yeah, you mentioned Shameless there, but you've been in so many programs, The Bill, Dexter, Soil of Witness, and more recently, Marcella. But for me, as a fan, I just loved Shameless, and I'm sure you picked up a few things in the Gallagher in Glasgow that would, I suppose, help you in your acting down in Manchester when Shameless came along, because it was just such a brilliant show, and it must have been class to be part of it and to play Jamie Maguire, you know. Sex, drugs, and the jockey.
Sex, drugs, and the jockey. I've never heard of it like that, but yes, it was, mate. Do you know what? It's funny because it was my first job. It was my first big job. So I was working in bars in London at the time when I got it. So as you know yourself, you work in bars, you do a lot of evening shifts. So believe it or not, when I got Shameless, I'd never seen it. My brother again. My brother,
shame on you.
Not because I didn't want to. I was working it, and this is before the time of, like, you know, that you couldn't just get 4OD and watch it, you know. It was like, if you missed it on a Tuesday night, that was it.
Did you never hear of a video?
A VHS, that's how long ago it was.
I had them all taped.
So yeah, when I got it, I told my brother, oh, that show you on Shameless, I've just planned a part on it. My brother was like, what? Now, it was great, but I tell you what happened to me was I went on series 4, mate, and that happens with a lot of series, you know. If you get 1, 2, 3 series, absolutely brilliant, and then there's a bit of a change. Like, I came on when, you know, you've got humongously popular, great characters leaving. You know, James left, you know, Anne-Marie left, Veronica's husband or something. You know, these great characters that everyone loved, they were leaving, and they were introducing these new characters, which was me and a lot of the Maguire. So when I went in series four actually wasn't that popular. It didn't do that well. And I, to be totally honest, don't think I was that good in it in series four anyway. But then it sort of, people got used to the new characters and the writing stayed the same. So it ended up being one of the greatest times of my life. I mean, I ended up doing 8 series of it, you know. I did series 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, and 11. I started it when I was 25 and I left when I was 33. So it's 8 years of my life, man, you know, and that's what brought me to Manchester, and this is home now. So very, very, very fond memories of Shameless, mate, really and truly.
Look, it was brilliant. Frank Gallagher, what a character he played.
Very good friend of mine, David, as well. Still, David, huge Manchester City fan. Huge Manchester City fan.
What's his name?
David Threlfall.
When I was a kid, he played... I always fancied myself as a bit of a skinhead rude boy, you know. He played a skinhead in Tucker's Look, if memory serves me right. And I just thought this guy was the coolest, the way he dressed and the shaved head. And
yeah.
I said, I want to look like him, you know. And then he played the bad guy in the program. And then, you know, I couldn't follow his career. And then when Shameless happened, you know, we all know of Frank Gallagher.
Absolutely. And do you know what, man? I'm sure I've told you this before, sort of secret thing. You know, he was second choice, you know. There was another actor you've never seen it. There was another actor who was cast as Frank Gallagher. They filmed the first 4 episodes with this other actor, and then they showed it to Channel 4, and Channel 4 watched it and said, "We love it. We love the show, but we don't like the guy that's playing Frank. We need you to recast." And David Threlfall was second choice, and so they went back to David, and they had to start all over again. And I could you imagine David Terrell fought like someone else playing Frank Gallagher. So there is four episodes in the archive of Channel 4 somewhere where another actor is playing Frank Gallagher.
The whole show was just brilliant. And I suppose, like, you know, the certain shows in your life, you know, when I was a kid, Grange Hill was just, that was the show. And then, you know, you'll follow shows or actors throughout your life. But every now and again, a show comes along and you just go, oh, yeah, this is me. I love this, you know. And Shameless is one of them shows. It's so popular in our house and with the lads. And it was, I'm not blowing smoke up your ass, but it was the talk down the public. Like, it was in conversation. You know, did you see Shameless and blah, 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 and look what happened. And it was brilliant. But you've also been in movies, and most recently, which I didn't get an invite for the premiere in Dublin either. You know, I can't believe you didn't take me when all your family were not, you know, didn't put me ahead of your family. So obviously, Bohemian Rhapsody, I went to see it in the cinema. What a movie. And you play Freddie Mercury's lover, Jim Hutton, another Irish man. That must be some buzz now to be on set there, because to see the finished product is unbelievable.
Yeah, it was, mate. I mean, it's, you know, obviously when you're filming something, you don't know that, you know, I didn't realize at the time that, you know, I was about to snog the guy who was going to win, you know, the Oscar for best actor, you know. It was a tough shoot though. I mean, it was like, there's a lot of stuff going on where, you know, there's a lot of, when they went over, you know, the day I went in, it was picked up at 7 o'clock in the morning. It's supposed to film the scene. And, you know, I'd sit in the trailer until maybe 6 o'clock in the evening and then come and say, oh, sorry, Aaron, we're not going to get to you this time. You know, it's like, there's a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes there that, you know, I wasn't privy to that could have ruined that movie. It was on the cards for 7 years. You know, there was talk of it. There was two other actors who had already been cast as Freddie, who ended up pulling out, Sacha Baron Cohen, and the guy who plays Q in the James Bond films. Ben Whishaw. These two guys were supposed to play Freddie first. I don't know the ins and outs of it, what happened. And then Rami ended up getting the job, and my agent phoned me and said, listen, there's a fan of yours from Shameless, actually. And would you put yourself on tape for this role of Jim Hutton? So I went on YouTube because people said you could see, you know, interviews with Jim Hutton. I basically just watched a couple of interviews with him, trying to get, you know, the sound of his voice down, and threw myself on tape, mate. And within a couple of days, got the phone call to say that I'd been offered the part. I mean, again, it never really, because I read the script, and, you know, Jim's not in it that much, so I wouldn't say I was underwhelmed, because I knew I was going to be in you're going to be in Bohemian Rhapsody. But I remember thinking at the time when someone said, "Oh, it's, you know, you're going to be playing Freddie's boyfriend," you assume, "Oh my God, this is going to be a humongous lead role." But because of the way the script was written, it's, you know, Jim didn't even come into it until halfway through. But yeah, it was a huge success. I went to the premiere at Wembley. It was actually at Wembley Stadium, the premiere. Mate, it was great. You know, I was sitting beside Guy Pearce. Guy Pearce was sitting one side of me. Justin from The Darkness was sitting at the other side of me. I had bloody RuPaul sitting behind me. Thank God he was sitting behind me, because he was 7 foot. I wouldn't have been able to see the women's screen. So yeah, it was, and even at the time, even at the premiere of it, I mean, there was 6,000 people there watching the premiere of it. We were all invited up the stage at the end, you know, and even then I was still thinking, it was still all going over my head that how big this movie was. And then when Rami won the Oscar, mate, I think that's really when it hit me. My God, you've taken part in something fantastic here. I mean, it knocked Grease off the top spot of like the most successful musical of all time. Grease had held it for, geez, I don't know how many years, like in terms of the money it made, I think. If I'm not mistaken, I think Bohemian Rhapsody hit the £1 billion mark.
Wow!
You know, which not that I've seen any of it.
but look, look at the lovely moustache I had.
Do you know what? You know the amount of people as well, Andrew, said to me, "Geez, you must have put on some weight for that movie." And the thing is, I didn't. It's just the way it was at the time. So rather than get into an argument, I just tell people, Jim had a bit of beef on him. So, you know, I had to stop going to the gym and I had to eat a bit extra. So people think I'm a real, you know, one of these.
Such a dedicated actor.
Yeah.
Now, Aaron, what does the future hold now for you with the COVID? Like, as you say, you know, the theatre may not come back. I'm sure the arts are going to be hit for funding. So what does the future hold for you? Is there anything coming up, or could you walk during, like, could you do anything during COVID? Is there anything you could do, like, online or anything like that?
Well, I mean, I almost did like an online thing for the Lyric Theatre, which was because the Lyric is where I did Good Vibrations, and they're having a bit of a tough time at the minute. And one of the director from that sort of phoned me up and said, "Oh, listen, we're thinking of doing this online play. Would you go for it?" Anyway, it doesn't really matter because it didn't happen. I got a job. Basically, I'm lucky because I was offered a TV job. That was going to clash with Good Vibrations. And although that would have been more money and stuff, I ended up turning it down to do Good Vibrations because it's hold it really close to my heart, that playing that part, and I wanted to go to New York. And anyway, when it was cancelled, my agent phoned me and said, "Oh, listen, the TV job that you've turned down, they got wind that Good Vibrations has been cancelled, so they want to reoffer it to you." So I was like, "Brilliant, going to start in September." It's like a thing called Madame Blanc. It's not going to set the world. I guess you would describe it as like Midsummer Murders set in France. We're going to get filming in Malta and stuff. So it's supposed to start filming in September, but then I found out a couple of weeks ago that it's been pushed back to the spring. So it's in the bag. I've got that job, but when they're going to be able to film it is beyond me. So yeah. I wouldn't like to comment on what's going to happen with the theatres, Andrew. It's sad state of affairs. Like, I mean, my wife works in the theatre, and they have had to furlough a lot of people, and now they're talking, you know, a lot of people are going to get laid off and things like that. And I know the government are coming up with this big, you know, £1.7 billion package, which looks good, you know, and it's better than nothing. But, you know, when you think the amount of theatres that there are, it's not really going to touch the sides. So hopefully TV and film will survive. As I say, you know, you've got these mortgage holidays and stuff and things like that. So we're not broke just yet. But hopefully this job that I've got will sort of start filming after Christmas sometime. And it'll be 5 weeks in Malta, mate, which I've never been to. So again, and like we were saying at the start of the show, another job where I've got to go away and be away from the kids and stuff like that. And of course, with the kids being at school and things, I can't really bring them over. They've been to America with me when I was filming, which was great. You know, we lived in New Orleans for 6 months, and I had the wife and children with me, and it was a great experience. But now, with the ages they are, you know, if I go to Malta for 5 weeks to film, that'll be it, mate. I'm not seeing them for 5 weeks, you know.
Well, I am available to go to hold your coat. Offer any walk-on parts. You do know that. I've just put myself in the picture. I've no acting experience, but I've been to the Gallagher a few times, so I know a few characters that could inspire me.
All right, man, not a problem. I'll keep that in mind. So,
so are you looking forward to the 10 in a row season?
Oh, man, I can't wait. You know, I really, really hope to get, because I was only at the one game last season at the start. You know, the one that you sort of that after the Celtic AM, I think it was Hamilton. So, yeah, hopefully, mate, you know, I got to get myself to Glasgow for a couple of games. I'll do Celtic AM with you again, hopefully, if you'll help me. Yeah, definitely. I'd love to get with my little nephew again as well, because as I say, he was at his first Celtic game when I was there. He's been to a few since that I wasn't at. So I'd like to go with him and my brother again and see a couple of games. And he'd be all chuffed. I told him the other night that I would get him a wee shout out on the show. So Keelan, mate, there you go, mate. You got your shout out, lad. So you did.
Aye, brilliant. Now, Aaron, I'd like to thank you for coming on. It's been a pleasure, because it's a while since we caught up. There have been a few messages going to and fro during lockdown, a bit of slagging on some videos that we can't talk about on the show. But yeah, we've had a bit of a laugh during the lockdown. And I look forward to seeing it at some stage during the season in Glasgow for a beer. And maybe Tip McCann might give us a big day out and a chance to buy a new hat.
Absolutely, Andrew. It's been an absolute pleasure doing it. We had a really, really good to catch up with you, man.
Aaron, as I said, best of luck with the future. And when you're up picking up your Oscar, don't forget me and Tip in your speech.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You'll be top of the list, mate.
Aaron, hail, and talk soon.
All right, Andrew. Take care, mate. Hail.
Thanks to Aaron for taking the time out to chat to us today. It was great to catch up with someone who didn't let the fame go to his head. A genuine, nice, down-to-earth bloke who's just one of the boys. We are almost finished the new upgrades to the website, and the new app is almost ready to go. The app completes everything we have planned for now. We have now ticked all the boxes and can boast a complete independent Celtic fan platform. Website, Celtic Fanzine TV, the Fanzine both in print and digital, Celtic Soul podcast, our Celtic AM pre-match events, live events, and now the app. We haven't been able to make any content for Celtic Fanzine TV since lockdown, but once we can get back on the road following the team, we have a few ideas for some original content which we think you'll like.
Now, to keep the content free and independent, we are relying on the listeners and readers to support us. So please visit our website, CelticFanzine.com/shop/ and buy a bit of merchandise, a fanzine or subscriptions. Prices start at £5. But don't worry, if you can't afford anything, that's no problem. We will still provide the same content to everybody. Fans have been in contact to see how else they can support us, and we are working on a members area for subscribers to the fanzine. And you will also be able to become a supporter for the price of a pint. More info when we get it up and running, hopefully next week. As always, thank you for listening and for your continued support. And once again, thanks to our producer, Ronan McQuillan. The podcast is available on all platforms, so hit the subscribe or follow button and you'll never miss an episode. Alternatively, you can visit CelticFanzine.com/podcast/ where you will find all episodes of the podcast. Please follow More Than 90 Minutes on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter, where we will have offers on merchandise, a few competitions where you can win some merchandise, fanzines, and once we're back, match going, we'll stick up a few tickets as well. Thanks again to our sponsor, McKeever's Bar, Portadown. If your business or Celtic Supporters Club would like to sponsor an episode or advertise in the fanzine or on the website, please get in contact. You can email us at info@celticfanzine.com. As always, keep the comments coming in and let us know your story or who you would like us to have a chat with on the show. We will be back on Tuesday with episode 18 when Celtic treble winner Ramon Vega will be joining me for a chat. Enjoy the weekend. I'm off out tonight for a meal because that's the only way I can get a few points of stew. And I'm looking forward to watching Celtic, no matter who they're playing, and checking out the new virtual season ticket before the real action starts next week. Keep the faith and stay safe.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.